And now we come to Tabo versus Times Mirror Company. Ready to proceed?
Ready, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Robert Coffin. I am the attorney for the plaintiff in the underlying case and the appellant in this case. These issues have been extensively briefed. The central issue in my case is whether the trial court committed reversible error in essentially ignoring the application of the Supreme Court of California's ruling in the Tettelbaum case, which essentially says, in California, if a person pleads guilty to an underlying crime and in a subsequent civil action, that issue comes in not in any preclusive way, but the person who pled guilty in this civil case is entitled to explain to the trier of fact why he or she pled guilty. And essentially, what the Supreme Court has done is to give litigants an opportunity to explain what exigencies existed to cause them to plead guilty and let the trier of fact determine what effect to give to that guilty plea. The district court in this case, Judge Napoleon Jones, essentially grabbed that guilty plea and said, well, he pled guilty, end of case. He applied a preclusive effect. He couldn't consider this to be an admission. He did not give us any latitude in that regard. He cut the case off before we ever saw the trier of fact. And when he did that, he ignored the Supreme Court ruling in Tettelbaum, which was recently, in 2001, reaffirmed. It's been good law for decades in this jurisdiction. Under the Erie Doctrine, Judge Jones was required to apply that case, apply that body of law, and he did not.
If we agreed with you, what do we do next? I mean, that is, there are still other arguments with regard to the sufficiency of the pleading. And I'm curious in particular as to why you seem to have pled a negligence claim and a negligence misrepresentation claim. And the negligence claim seems to be a difficult and hard one, and the negligence misrepresentation one perhaps less so. What's the difference between them, and why do you need both of them? What is the negligence claim other than a negligence misrepresentation claim?
Well, it's probably one and the same, but in California, negligence misrepresentation claim carries with it the aspect of fraud. I mean, it's classified as that, and that's why practitioners usually plead both negligence and negligent misrepresentation, because with the negligent misrepresentation, you pick up a fraud element.
Well, right, but in this instance, that's what your allegation is. You don't have any other negligence other than the claim that there was a misstatement made that you relied on. I mean, basically, your cause of action has to encompass the elements of negligent misrepresentation, or it doesn't exist. I'm just trying to clarify that, because there seem to be two different analyses, and I don't know why we need to get into both.
Well, there may be some redundancy here, Your Honor, but as a matter of caution, most practitioners include both. You never know how it's going to go when you get before a jury. You never know how it's going to go when you get before a judge. So going into it, you put in as much as you can. The negligence here and the negligent misrepresentation arises out of the same set of facts. Namely, this person on behalf of Popular Science magazine was telling Mr. Tabo that it's perfectly legal to advertise and to sell these descramblers, and that their legal department had researched this.
It is, isn't it?
So that's
it is legal to manufacture and sell descramblers, isn't it?
Is it?
Is it not?
I believe it is, Your Honor.
You believe what is? That it is legal or it is always illegal?
I don't think it's always illegal. I think that there's a variety of different circumstances where they're perfectly legal. And I should point out that...
So if somebody wants to put an ad in a magazine that says, I want to sell these scramblers, and it's especially a little teeny thing that says, these scramblers for sale, and says, is it legal to sell the scramblers? And somebody says, yes. Where's the fraud or the negligence?
Well, under these circumstances, the fraud and the negligence arises from the fact that the Time Warner, or Popular Science, knew or should have known that their counterpart was running around the United States getting people indicted who were selling these scramblers.
Not when they were selling, not because they were selling the scrambler, but because they were illegally selling these scramblers.
Well, we don't.
That is to say, the scramblers, which were designed to be or were sold to be used for illegal purposes. Now, I don't see anything in your pleading that you told them these are going to be illegally modified descramblers and or I'm going to sell them for illegal purposes. Was there anything in your pleading about that?
Your Honor, I don't believe that there's anything specifically that says that in the pleading.
Then what is wrong if you said to me, can somebody legally sell a descrambler? And my answer is yes. What's wrong with my answer?
It's an incomplete answer because at the
yes, unless you do it illegally?
Well, the incomplete answer stems from the fact that the Popular Science and its lawyers knew or should have known that everybody who was advertising was subject to being indicted because Time Warner, a related entity, was going around getting the United States attorneys to go out and arrest these people and to prosecute them.
On the basis that they were selling them illegally. That is to say, the descrambler was illegally modified from what it ought to have been, and or they were telling people, the sellers were telling people it's for an illegal purpose. Now, it may be technical, but I'm asking you, I don't see anything in the pleading that says you told them I'm going to do it for an illegal purpose or it's been illegally modified. So I'm having a hard time, even if you asked a lawyer a simple question, how it becomes negligence to say, yes, descramblers are legal. They can be legally sold.
Well, Your Honor, it's a little difficult at this stage of my case to take what you're asking and say, that these other cases involved certain peculiarities that are not in my case. I don't know what those other cases involve. The information there is simply not sufficient.
Well, if you read our cases, the cases specifically say that descramblers are legal and selling them is legal and there's nothing illegal about selling descramblers. We've got Ninth Circuit authority on that. So my question to you is, how do you spell out negligence if you ask somebody, can I put a little ad in there that says, I have descramblers for sale, little teeny ad that says descramblers for sale, and you say, is that legal? The person says, yeah, that's legal. What's wrong with that answer?
Well, Your Honor, I think I say in my complaint, I allege sufficiently, I believe, to indicate that Mr. Table was doing essentially the same thing that the other people were doing in these other cases. He didn't know about those other cases, but Popular Science did. Popular Science knew or should have known that people that were doing exactly what Mr. Table was doing were getting arrested, indicted, and prosecuted. Now, that information should have been conveyed to Mr. Table when he was asked.
Then you're getting slightly beyond a misrepresentation claim, aren't you? Or anything like that. Because then you're saying that not only did they have an obligation not to make a factually true statement, but they had an obligation, not to make factually untrue statement, but they had an obligation to give them complete advice.
Yes, Your Honor. That's exactly what I'm saying.
And is that the difference between a negligence claim and a negligent misrepresentation claim?
In some respects, it is, Your Honor.
So you're essentially arguing that they had a duty of care to provide legal advice to him as opposed to not to make a misrepresentative statement?
No, they needed to tell them what they knew or should have known, and that is if he went ahead and placed that ad in their magazine, that it is more likely than not that he was going to be arrested.
That's even the question he asked them. The question he asked was, is it legal?
Is it legal?
Yeah. To advertise. Another question.
I think you get different opinions on that, Your Honor, as to whether it's legal or not. I think prosecutors, there's prosecutors out there who would say that it's not legal to advertise.
There are actually two different statutes involved, mm-hmm. right? And our Ninth Circuit case is actually about the other one, the one that says that it can be legal to advertise scramblers. Does that make any difference? In other words, it's not the one that Mr. Fadwell was first prosecuted under, but the other statute. Could that possibly make a difference as to the answer to the question?
It did not make a difference in Mr. Table's case, Your Honor. He got arrested for doing something.
Well, I'm saying the opposite. We have a Ninth Circuit case saying it can be legal to sell to scramblers, but they're talking about under a different statute, not this one. So I'm asking you whether it makes any difference if that this statute, whether the answer might be the other one.
I don't know the answer to that question, Judge, but what I would like to focus on is the fact that Mr. Table got arrested and he got thrown in prison for doing what he thought was an illegal act because he had been told so by Time Warner, by Popular Science. Had he known that there were people being arrested for doing what he was doing, had they given him full disclosure, had they told them what they knew or should have known, he would not have done that. He cannot control what the U.S. attorney is going to do.
Now, listen, we've got your argument well in hand.
Yes, sir.
You've gone over your time.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate Your Honor's attention.
Now, the time is 10 minutes per side.
All right.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't have been, actually.
All right.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Carrie Lyon Grossman, and I represent the appellees. This is a simple case that can be resolved on a motion for judgment on the pleadings. Plaintiff has alleged.
First of all, was it resolved on a motion for judgment on the pleadings? And the district judge seems to have concocted some hybrid here. And I assume what we need to do here is simply disregard all the extra pleading information and look at the pleadings. Is that right? Although he did not do that.
You can do that. Because we brought this as a motion for judgment on the pleadings, the review is de novo, and you can affirm the decision on any ground that's contained in the record. For a motion for judgment on the pleadings, we can consider the allegations in the complaint, documents attached to the complaint, and documents and facts that are subject to judicial notice. And based on that material.
Which would not include, for example, Ms. Orth's statement that she never made this statement.
That would not include Ms. Orth's declaration. That's correct. If you choose to consider those other documents beyond the pleadings and matters which are subject to judicial notice, this can be decided as a summary judgment motion.
You know, the difficulty with that is that the district judge did decide it as a summary judgment motion. So he did rely on all those other things.
That may be the case, but this Court can decide on a motion for judgment on the pleadings for anything in the record that supports that the causes of action should be dismissed as a motion for judgment on the pleadings. And
the difficulty is if the district judge was only deciding the judgment on the pleadings, then probably he could have given leave to amend.
He could have given leave to amend, but here we believe that giving leave to amend would be futile. No matter what facts the plaintiff came forward with, he cannot allege facts sufficient to support a claim for negligence and a claim for misrepresentation. No matter what facts he were to allege, no matter what discovery he would do, it would not change the fact that Tabu unjustifiably relied on the sales advertising representative's statement as to her company's position on the law of descramblers to make a determination on whether or not to go forward with his business.
Now, do you agree that the judge improperly relied on Title X and that we should just get over that hump?
Improperly
relied on, ignored Title X and that regard to the guilty plea, that's not dispositive, we should just move on.
Under Title X, a guilty plea cannot be conclusive proof of guilt in a civil action.
So you do agree?
That That is correct. However, under Teitelbaum, guilty plea can be admissible in a civil action as a statement against interest.
That's right. But if we're dealing on the pleadings, the guilty plea isn't even in the pleading. And with regard to the and therefore, it just isn't really for us at this point.
I think the facts within the guilty plea can be considered because they are subject to judicial notice and can be admissible under statements against interest.
But
I don't think they're necessary to – I don't think any facts in the guilty plea are necessary to reach the decision that all three causes of action should be dismissed.
So essentially you're saying we should move past the Teitelbaum issue and get to the merits of the cause of that.
Correct. And getting to the merits of the causes of action, as a matter of law, Taboo was unjustified in relying on the statements of Ms. Orth. While Taboo had years of experience in the descrambler business, he sought advice from a woman whom he was negotiating with at arm's length for ad space. The sales representative merely stated her company's position on descramblers.
Why isn't this exactly the situation in the Billy case that would support a cause of action? I.e., a circumstance in which, with regard to a specific transaction, there was a request for information and a negligent misrepresentation was made, if it was a negligent misrepresentation, leaving aside Judge Fernandez's point. Isn't that exactly what Billy said was a cause of action?
I apologize. I'm having a little bit difficulty.
Isn't in the Billy case, or I don't know, or Biley, I don't have
the Biley case about the
Biley,
accounting.
All right. Isn't this exactly the circumstance which was said to be a viable cause of action? That is, a situation in which there is a specific cause of action, a specific transaction by parties in privy of contract for a request for information, for information or a legal opinion is made. One is provided, in fact, that leaves aside a justifiable reliance issue, perhaps. But up until that point, isn't that exactly what the Billy case says is a viable cause of action?
No. And under the Biley case, in that case, there was a contract for the professional service at issue, there being accounting. Here, there was no contract for legal services. In fact, there couldn't be because
But the point, as I understand it, of that argument, they had an example of a legal opinion which was very close to this one, in which you're dealing with someone on a commercial transaction and you ask for their legal opinion about whether this is a viable legal transaction, and you get one. It isn't, there's no privy of contract with a lawyer, but there is with regard to the person that you're requesting. I thought it was exactly on point.
In here, in regards to a lawyer situation, because we're at opposite sides of the table and negotiating a deal on opposite sides, I don't think it's reasonable nor justifiable to rely on the advice of a lawyer on the opposite side of a deal, nor do I think it can be as a matter of law, which was established in the BLM case. In regards, going back to the unjustifiability, because they were at the other side of a deal being negotiated with at arm's length, the BLM case established as a matter of law that it is unjustifiable to rely on that advice of the attorney on the other side, and we similarly ask that this Court affirm on the same grounds. In regards to the negligence claim, Mr. Taboo has not and cannot show that a duty was owed to him. In determining duty, it's a matter of law in which the courts decide. The court generally considers several factors in determining whether or not a duty exists. Those essentially boil down to two issues, foreseeability and policy. It was unforeseeable as a matter of law that Mr. Taboo would sell illegally altered descramblers with an intent to defraud the cable industry. He never told my client Popular Science.
Well, that's sort of fatuous, isn't it? The many, many ads that are sitting in Popular Science for a cable descramblers, I gather that they probably had a pretty good idea that the people who are buying and selling these things were not doing so there weren't people who were buying and selling them in order to sell them to cable companies so they could sell them to customers. There were people who were trying to avoid most likely avoid paying the cable companies for the cable. Is that not pretty good yet?
Well, the law is clear that magazines do not have a duty to investigate.
That's a different issue because they didn't record, they didn't say that. They could have said, fine, we have no duty, we're not going to answer the question. But that's not what they did.
Our company, according to what's alleged in the complaint, our company did not have any knowledge regarding what Mr. Tebu intended to do other than selling to scramblers. And it was our company's legal position that selling to scramblers was not per se illegal. Our company did not have any knowledge based on the allegations in the complaint that he intended to do anything illegal with them.
And they can be sold to individuals who are not going to use them illegally, correct?
Correct.
Well, just for curiosity, is that because you can have extra boxes? Or I was trying to figure out why that is. What would be a legal direct sale use of a cable, of a the scrambler?
I'm not certain.
You can have extra boxes.
I think you could have extra boxes. I think you could call the cable company and get your scrambler perhaps hooked on to the cable company so they are, in fact, able to charge you for the shows. But I'm just speculating here.
Go back to the BLM case. I understand what BLM said, but I'm not sure that this is flatly inconsistent with BLM, which was a Supreme Court case. There is an example in BLM of a situation in which a lender loaned money to a partnership based on an opinion letter that was provided by the partnership and then sued on the ground that the opinion letter was a negligent misrepresentation, and the court held that the complaint stated a cause of action of observing a legal opinion intended to secure benefits of the client, either monetary or otherwise, must be issued with due care, or the attorneys who do not act carefully will have breached a duty owed to those they attempted or expected to influence on behalf of their client. This is in the Biley opinion, cited with approval, and it's exactly the situation, as far as I can tell, leaving aside the question of whether there was an negligent misrepresentation.
I guess I would see the difference in being the relationships in the parties here versus the relationship in the parties discussed in the case mentioned in the Biley case. Whereas here, they were at a third party, it was a third party in an arm's length negotiation.
And negotiation between a lender and a partnership with an arm's length negotiation.
And it seems to me that if you're negotiating at an arm's length deal, you cannot give legal advice to somebody on the opposite side of the deal.
Except that Biley says otherwise. So then the question is the question of whether or not there is a negligent misrepresentation here, in fact, before us? Was that litigated below? Could it be litigated on the pleading?
The decision on whether or not there was negligent misrepresentation.
Whether it was a fact. In other words, this issue that we've been discussing as to whether it was not a negligent misrepresentation because it wasn't untrue. Is that issue before us at this point?
In order for there to have been negligent misrepresentation, Mr. Tebow would have had to justifiably rely on misrepresentation.
But that's a different question. The question that Judge Fernandez has been raising and the one that I want you to address is whether the issue of whether the statement was untrue, i.e., whether it is in fact legal or not legal to sell these to scramblers, is before us at this point.
It seems clear to me that the statement that the scramblers is not per se illegal is true, and there's nothing in
it. I didn't say it wasn't per se. I mean, of course, we don't know exactly what was said at this point because we're dealing on the pleadings, but at least in one of these letters, as after the fact letters, there were some fairly strong statements made, something to the effect of, which was pretty broad. I can't find it, but the statement was not that it's not per se illegal. It was broader than that.
Our company was unaware that Mr. Tebow planned to illegally alter the scramblers and intended to defraud the cable industry.
Well, he didn't illegally alter them. I mean, he claims he just sent them on in a box. I mean, maybe he bought something that was illegally altered, but there's no evidence that he illegally altered them.
In his plea agreement, he states that he did illegally alter them.
No, he did not.
It is referenced in the complaint, and those facts...
He didn't say he illegally altered them. All he said was that he knowingly sold illegally altered things. That doesn't even mean that he knew they were illegal. He just knowingly sold something that was illegally altered.
In his plea, it says that the defendant acted with the intent to defraud the cable television industry.
Right.
It's on page 79
right.
of the excerpts of record. Our client was unaware of that intention, and there's nothing in the complaint or allegations to suggest that our company was aware of that fact.
I think you've used more than your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You used 3 minutes extra instead of...
I will give you a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Your Honor, the one thing I would urge the Court to focus on is what the allegations of the complaint say, and under Rule 12, they're supposed to be accepted as true. In that, I have pled, and I also submitted some additional information during the motions stage, that what was happening here is that Time Warner, which was in some relationship with Popular Science, was going around the country urging prosecutors to go after people like Mr. Table. Your Honors have expressed, you know, questions here. Well, isn't there some legal purpose or not? Well, there was no legal purpose as far as Time Warner was concerned. If you had one of these boxes, and they're not.
Again, this is all extra
reading,
but Time Warner wasn't related at the time, right?
Pardon me?
Time Warner was not a related company at the time.
Well, we don't know, Judge, and this is the problem.
Well, I understand it's outside the pleadings, but you can't rely on any of it for that reason.
Yeah, I would like to have some discovery so I can prove this point, but what was happening is Time Warner is going around the country having the U.S. attorneys prosecute people like Ken Table, who were doing nothing more than buying these boxes from a wholesaler and selling them through the magazine. Now, Popular Science knew that, or should have known that, and should have told them to table that. That's my case. They assumed the duty. They could have said nothing. They could have said, we're not going to say anything to you. You make your own decisions. No, they didn't do that. They said, it's legal. It's legal to advertise and it's legal to sell. That's what this case is about. You got Time Warner going to the prosecutor saying, get that guy. And you got Popular Science saying, send me your money. And we'll place your ad. And not telling them what...
I think we understand your point.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Exciting argument.